All right, well, welcome everyone. Today I have the pleasure of introducing Felix Tang, who's going to be talking to us on evaluation of injury prevention efforts. Felix Tang is currently an Associate Director at KPMG Actuaries. He's been working in general insurance for 12 years, and he's been a very busy writer and presenter over the years, and some of the topics that he's presented on include cost of capital approach to risk margins, GLMs in health insurance, and large and unusual claims. Now, I've actually had the pleasure of working with Felix across those 12 years, and certainly in our office he's the go-to guy for all sorts of technical problems. But beyond the technical, I've found that Felix is quite the thinker and does like to think about things a lot. So I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what his thoughts on the evaluation of injury prevention efforts will be. So please welcome Felix.
Thank you, Laura, for the nice introduction. Today, I'd like to share with you some thoughts on evaluation of prevention efforts, programs, or strategies and the like. It's going to be a short presentation, and therefore it's going to be an introduction to the topic rather than doing justice to the broad areas and the established practices within this topic. Nevertheless, I still find it to be a very interesting topic for myself, and I can see also there is a parallel coming from my actuarial background. So let's begin. So let me begin by giving you some background on the topic of prevention and compensation. So I know that this seminar has changed its name from being accident compensation to the broader injury scheme seminar. And I think the change is very welcomed, because I think for compensation, we learn a lot of things from the after the event things. But if there is no mechanism to sort of bring that learning back to sort of preventing the event from happening in the first place, then I think somewhere we're missing something. And of course, actuaries have been quite heavily involved in compensations and the like. Primarily in the benefit design and also assessment of the compensation levels. But I think if I may draw a common theme between prevention and compensation, it is that there is a general lack of resources overall. And therefore it gives rise to the need to balance outcomes. And I think that is true for compensation, which means when you overcompensate in one, you undercompensate in the other, given the limited resources. And the same goes for prevention of injuries, where when you invest in prevention measures that are ineffective, you are sort of limiting the chance of a future sort of better improvements in the strategy because of the limited resources, or a larger pushback because of lack of trust in the initiative. So I think that in terms of the questions of how do we assess a fair level of compensation, I think actuaries are very well aware, and it's a well-researched topic. But in terms of the questions of can we assess a fair investment of prevention, I think it includes a broad spectrum of topics that may not sort of rest squarely within the actuarial realms, and it can include things like education, training, promotion, and that sort of stuff. But I think there is a common theme in here, which is it involves an upfront commitment, working with imperfect data, and it is a commitment to provide something in the future that is subject to uncertainty, and there is an outcome that is also subject to uncertainty of some sort. So that's how I see the parallel, and I think the application of an actuarial control cycle as a concept is very useful. In this case, I'm going to be talking about the subject of evaluation, which is akin to the monitoring step within the control cycle. So let me touch on why do we need to evaluate. I've sort of hinted on it because it's sort of part and parcel to the control cycle. But some of the obvious reasons that is often overlooked is that it is just a responsible thing to do. The parallel was drawn that when someone introduced a vaccine, you would test it and you would sort of go through clinical trials and things like that to make sure that it works and it doesn't harm people, etc. So I think the same thing goes for prevention measures, where you're putting in something that is substantive, and sort of thoughts needs to go into it and invest, you know, into that investment to make sure that it actually works, and also it doesn't actually produce the other opposite outcome. And also there are other reasons, you know, when you evaluate whether the prevention strategy is working, it also produces the you know, the evidence of why. And more importantly, the flip side is also the case, which is to show that something is not working. Therefore, it allows time for you to correct and sort of change course rather than sort of going down the wrong path. And also, the analogy is that when you go to a doctor and they prescribe a drug, they typically ask you to come back for a follow-up visit to see whether there are any sort of unanticipated side effects. And it's the same case for prevention strategies, I believe, because you put in something with the best intention, but then sometimes it sort of produces the behavior that wasn't intended, and it sort of undermines the outcome. And I think by evaluating evaluation as an ongoing process through the prevention strategies also provide new information and new ways of doing things. An example is that, say, in a game of chess, you try to sort of checkmate the king, but then there are multiple ways of doing it, and it depends on the tactics depends on sort of, you know, your opponent's moves and things like that. So I think the same case goes for this, where you have a strategy that you want to reduce the number of injuries or the severity of it, but depending on sort of the reaction of your target population, you would actually adopt a different measure. For example, you may find that communication by emails is not as effective as going and talking to them individually, and then you would sort of adapt to different populations for that. And lastly, I think it also removes the reliance on gut feel. For prevention strategies, I think in most of the organizations, these are big things. So it involves a lot of sort of monetary investments, people, man hours and things like that. So people do attach emotionally to it. And there's also sort of always a psychology aspect to it where, people don't want to find the evidence that shows that things are not working and therefore dooms the strategy. So I think there is also scope for the evaluation to provide a more objective measure so that you can then assess and tailor the strategy to the outcomes as they unfold. Now, I think at the core of the evaluation of prevention strategies is the question of does it work? But it's so broad that it doesn't really tell us much in terms of how you go about answering that question. So I think it is instructive to unpack that into the time horizon, because I think for evaluation, it actually changes character, whether it is before the event, during the event, and after. So it means, and also there are other dimensions to whether things are working or not. For example, so you may have a prevention strategy that is aimed to reduce the number of strategies, number of injuries, and also reduce the severity of the injuries. And you want to know whether your strategy or program is making the best use of dedicated resources because of the limited resources. And is there any observable effect within the time frame that you have for this program? Meaning, maybe you need to wait, are we measuring in months, or are we measuring years or generations for the effect to actually be observable? Does it have a lasting effect, and does it adapt to changes in business and people, or are we talking about any turnover in people would sort of render the strategy ineffective, and you need to retrain the people again? So I think these questions are they do arise before, during, and after the implementation of the any prevention strategies, and therefore as part of the evaluation design is important to take these into account. So if I unpack that further, in terms of designing how do we go about evaluating prevention strategies and programs, I think there are certain principles that we can distill from my read and the research that I've seen. So always evaluate early, because it's sort of a wrong mindset to wait until everything has been done and dusted and then do a post-mortem of it and then find that it actually didn't work as you wish. So I think it has a lot of wisdom to try to evaluate early as we can. And also it requires collection of data before implementation, and that's usually an aspect that is overlooked, or people were taken by surprise by it. So, for example, you may have a strategy that you need to observe changes in incidence rates. Then it makes sense to have data for incident rates before the program's implementation is so obvious. This actually creates the underlying concept in this is basically there is lead time towards implementation and make sure that things are working. While all of the efforts and creativity is spent into designing the actual prevention program, there's also groundwork to be done beforehand. And evaluation is most effective when it is embedded within the prevention strategy. And it's also an ongoing process. Within the actuarial concept, there is this concept of control cycle, which the monitoring phase is embedded within the cycle. And I think the best evaluation is one that takes into account of both practical relevance as well as academic rigor. And so I think for actuaries, we are quite comfortable with the love and hate relationship we have with our data. So we sort of love more data, but we hate too much of the irrelevant data or misleading ones et cetera. So I think in this case, it needs to take into account of both. And I think actuaries are very comfortable with that concept. And the evaluation depends on goals. So it's one thing to look at incident rates and things like that, but then if your goals is trying to bring about sort of more awareness or an education or other measures, then it makes sense to have that taken into account rather than a one-size-fits-all evaluation. And also different strategies would require different levels of rigor. For untested ones, that you will do more. For ones that are already established with modifications, you do less, so that you don't over apply your resources in doing something that may not yield the outcome. So there are different stages that I can see from the more rigorous evaluation analysis that I can see from existing literature and things, and they usually come into four different stages. So let me talk you through them. So the first one being the more formative evaluation is basically a test of the concepts before implementation. What that means is you might have it takes the form of sort of test your proposed written materials. It could be identifying barriers to participate in the program, for some workers they may be working on shifts that they cannot attend a particular workshop, etc. And as I mentioned before, you may be testing which communication channel is the most effective, etc. The aim here is try to maximize the chance of success before you go full force into the implementation. So that's formative. And then you have what's called process evaluation. What that basically means is that it's testing the program's reach into and participation within the target population. So, and if I can step back at this point, is that we have something that we set to do at first, which is the prevention, and there are different strategies and initiatives. And then at the end, we are measuring some kind of outcome, which is, injuries really reduced? Out of the people who have injured themselves, has the severity been sort of minimized? But then because of the difficulty to measure from one point to the end, you know, there are sort of interim steps to see whether the program is on the right track. So this is sort of akin to mapping the stages of the program. So we talked about process evaluation being the reach, and then we have impact evaluation. It's basically trying to measure in terms of the, not the actual outcome per se, in terms of injuries and things, but the propensity to produce those injuries, which is things like the attitudes, knowledge, and also like beliefs and behavior. And then lastly, we have the outcome, which is I think familiar to most of us, where you're looking at measures such as fatality, number of fatalities, number of injuries, incidents, and lost time. So how do we actually conduct these evaluations? There are available tools to do all of these stages, and they basically come into two broad buckets, as you would probably guess, qualitative and quantitative. I think I'll start off with the quantitative ones, because I think most of us will be familiar with that. So if I start with the counting system, that's basically another word for tracking the statistics and metrics in terms of number of fatalities or number of incidents, injuries. From what I've seen, some organizations would develop things like a dashboard report where they will in there show some headline figures, you know, on year-to-date experience compared to last year, measuring on the variables that I mentioned, incidents, injuries, fatalities, lost times, by business areas sometimes, and also by injury types to detect any, you know, shifts in mix, and also comparison with last year, etc. And also in there, they would have defined thresholds so that they can track whether at any point in time whether they are tracking along with their targets. The main use of this report is, of course, to flag any concerning areas so that they can drill down further. So so I think that's an important context for use of these reports, which is not so much the numbers per se, and try to keep the numbers down, but I think if it is truthfully and properly used, it actually provides a lot more information than just the figures themselves. So the next one is surveys. So we have all done some in our lifetime. So in terms of surveys, there's also a catch in terms of the design for surveys, which is for these ones, they are typically used to measure things that are less quantifiable. For example, so I've listed them there, which is knowledge, attitudes, and behavior, where you ask a question and then you see what sort of response you get. And the difference between surveys and, I guess, interviews, which I'll talk about later, is that for surveys, it sort of is more subject to scientific interpretation, where you can design your survey such that you can do pie charts or track differences in your response, etc. Experimental studies under controlled settings. That's a bit unusual. So I think from my research, it's very rarely used. But I think like the classic example there is testing of airbags, where you would have a controlled environment where you're testing, sort of crashing cars and dummies towards walls and see what sorts of calibration would minimize the injury. And it's very hard to apply in another context where, maybe you are trying to test what sort of road speed would produce, would minimize the injury or, in a real situation. So this has sort of limited use depending on the context. And then lastly, we have inference. So this is talking about when we are partway through the injury prevention program, where you have some information on change in attitudes and knowledge, but you don't necessarily see the outcome yet. I think sort of people are already sort of been educated about the prevention measures and things like that, but you may not have enough credible evidence to see the outcome. Then there might be tools available for you to infer from this information to say whether your outcome is likely to be favorable or not. So if I come back to qualitative measures, I think as actuaries myself, I think I feel that people might shy away from qualitative measures where, you know, most of the time we deal with sort of hard data where we can put it into Excel. But I think there are a lot of information that is rich within interviews and focus groups and the qualitative aspects of it. And it is akin to sort of talking to your claims managers and talking to your sort of executives within the group to understand risk governance and things like that. And then lastly, I have pilot tests, and that's sort of more for formative evaluations where you have a concept that you want to test, and then you sort of get a group together and test that concept. So I think, no, as we would all appreciate, nothing is really complete without a discussion of uncertainty. So I'll go through some list of them as I have found them in sort of readings and studies. So in terms of performing evaluations, one difficulty that they have sort of commonly arise is the problem of, you know, we are dealing with the rare events and the problem of, you know, testing statistical significance. What do I mean by that? We are, you know, preventing injuries that are, you know, by its nature, rare events. So in a sense that they are not the norm, so you don't have the, you know, most of the population sort of bumping into walls and that sort of stuff. We are dealing with a small occurrence. But then these occurrences were still, like, they are still one too many, basically. Anyone dies, you have one too many deaths. So I think, but in terms of evaluation and a scientific approach, we find ourselves in some kind of a challenge where when you have low volumes of data and you're dealing with a process that is not stable, like you have changes in mix and things like that, you run into a problem of statistical significance versus volatility that comes from the data. So that's what I think, from what I've seen, most of the studies sort of mention that as a challenge, and you know, you may get into a problem of not being able to conclude from a statistical significance point of view whether something is working or not. So I think that's why you know, some of this qualitative feedback is also very important to do, because I think it is a problem that cannot really be removed from you know, injury prevention evaluation. Another one that is usually mentioned is demographic changes pre and post implementation. For injury prevention schemes and programs and strategies, it can take a long time to implement, and then another time to actually see the effects of it. You know, so between its implementation, you know, design and implementation, to when it's completed and seeing the effect, a lot can happen. So you can have the target population change, you know, changing in terms of their mix. People come and go. Younger children just growing more mature and becoming more skilled in terms of, you know, their use of with their environment. So there is a maturity effect as well. So it's very hard to distinguish that from effective, you know, whether your program is actually effective or not. So it is sort of like a recognized sort of shortcoming of sort of real real situation, but I think you know, there are, so it's something to bear in mind. I don't think at this stage there is a sort of like a consensus approach to dealing with this issue anyway, but it is important to be aware of them, so when you're interpreting the results, it is, you know, it can be sort of added to the color. And also the next one is data bias. So it's sort of like a classic. You have people attend, willing to participate in a survey, usually the people who have something to say, and therefore, you know, you sort of get some kind of a bias from your data. And I think it is also true that for... so I think for this one, there are different strategies of trying to mitigate that, which is trying to make it compulsory if it is like a workers' comp type environment where you have every employee participating in some kind of a survey of some sort. But then you also get into the, you know, presence of mind and whether they are sort of there is a cluster of answer, you know, on things that, you know, the employee wants to hear anyway. So I think there are also bias in in sort of real data that it's important to understand. And then the next one is time constraint. So as I mentioned before, prevention strategies do take a long time for the effects to emerge. So what that means is some studies can afford to look at, sort of evaluate the strategy sort of 3 months on, 6 months on, and then 3 years on, or something like that. But then not everyone has that luxury it's kind of like, investment strategies where you invest in something and then you evaluate it in a quarter's time, but then that sort of defeats the whole purpose of testing the strategy because it has a longer horizon. So it's also a common sort of challenge that these analyses would come into. And then we have another one which is similar to time constraint, which is practicality and approximations, that in practice, ideally, we want to collect what every piece of information may or may not be available. And also, we all have sort of done surveys in our life where, it's a two-minute survey or something like that, and 2 minutes is too long, etc. So you sort of try to cut it down to, try to devise your questions to be shorter. So in this sense, you are sort of, at some stage, you are approaching some kind of proxy of the questions you really want to ask. and also there is a reminder effect of evaluations, which is when you do evaluations during the program, on the one hand, it makes sense to do it as in regular intervals as an ongoing process. But at the same time, some studies I found funny, which is that they mentioned this as a shortfall, that the data may be clouded with the fact that you're doing too much of it, and therefore people are kind of aware of the strategies that you have put in place, and they have behaved in such a way that that would respond to that reminder effect of evaluation, which I found strange because I think that's the whole point of having the strategy, and it is a very good way to me it has benefits, more benefits than not. The fact that it sort of clouds the analysis and it sort of makes the data biased in a sense, that it sort of to me is a bit secondary, but I found to be an interesting point to mention. And lastly, there's also fear of negative feeling, as I mentioned before. In this case, I think as actuaries, we are also not accustomed, but I think we are aware of the challenge that we have, in terms of profit pressures and things like that when we are estimating, liabilities for an insurance company where, bonuses are on the line. You get sort of pressures, may get pressures from that angle. And in this sense, it's sort of like a similar case where a lot of efforts have been put into a strategy that people don't want to let go, and then so I think there is sort of awareness that the evaluation needs to be objective and be open. So some concluding thoughts. I think there is indisputable value in preventing the strategies before the event than afterwards. I think they go hand in hand, so you can't sort of just have brilliant compensation but then ignoring the fact that you need to spend some money on preventing injuries from occurring in the first place. And I think there is, I think the best way to do it is have some kind of a mechanism that feeds back the learning back to prevention. And I think the ends doesn't necessarily justify using any means. What that means is any prevention efforts would, if they are not like completely, not a complete failure, would prevent some injury in some sense. But I don't think they are always the best use of the limited resources. So it is kind of saying that, by investing in a strategy that is not, secondary in terms of where it could end up, is sort of inferior. So I think it is important to evaluate the strategy as you go along so that you are making best use of the resources available to you. And Evaluation, I believe, is also vital as a monitoring step within the control cycle, and it helps in identifying good preventive practices and helps the organization steers away from ineffective ones. And lastly, this is where I draw the parallel. I think if evaluation of prevention efforts is characterized by imperfect data, an examination of an evolving process, and also it involves future uncertainty and requires a lot of judgment. And I see this is a very typical actuarial problem. I can recognize that it's sort of not entirely within the sort of actuarial space per se, but I think there's a lot of value that actuaries can help by providing the training that they have to this problem. So that's all I have for today. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Felix. Now, if anyone does have any questions, we have a microphone just in the middle of the room here, so if you could step up to that, state who you are and what organisation you're from, that would be fantastic. Do we have anyone who'd like to start with a question for Felix?
Mike Gurney from Comcare, Felix.
Yes.
Generally, we see across the Australian jurisdictions the incidence of serious claims are coming down. Have you got a thought whether that's just general societal pressure or societal changes or specific prevention type programs?
Mm-hmm. I think from obviously I don't have sort of sources of all analysis, but I think a common theme that I found was some of the prevention measures. Different claims and different profiles respond differently and at different speed. So I think in the earlier stages of a prevention strategy being in place, usually they are more like the more attritional methods that sort of goes away, but not necessarily your big guys. And these are the ones that actually cost the scheme money. So I think. So in terms of the diagnostics that you saw, and I think to some extent, in some examples, that was the case. So it is only when you drill down into the mix of it that you see, by claim size, we are only really getting rid of the ones that are more the nuisance one, but then not the other ones. So I'm not sure whether I'm answering the question, but I think that is the first thing to examine to see whether in terms of the incident rate going down is due to real improvements in terms of the end outcome, which is the cost or the bigger ones, or whether we are sort of just getting rid of the more like the administrative burdens of it, which I think there are still benefits from it from that, which is you're freeing up resources potentially to attend to the harder matters, but I think I think the in terms of the more severe ones, there's certain arguments that that the prevention efforts are how do you put it? They are not commonplace. If that makes sense. So I think to some extent some of them are due to sort of unfortunate circumstances that arose, rather than a systematic failure of certain processes or certain safety measures that produced those claims. So I'll leave it at that.
Actually, if I can chip in with a comment, I've been to a couple of scheme updates this morning where just improvements in the age of vehicle fleets was cited as a contributor to that. So, I mean, I personally think one of the difficulties of, if you don't mind me just picking on your presentation, one of the challenges with these programs is that there's probably going to be a number of programs in place, and it gets really difficult to try and separate out different preventive programs and then your sort of more environmental factors, if I can call it that, like fleets. So. Mm. Bonus exercise.
Andrew Smith, PwC. Obviously, there's benefit in large organisations in particular having focused prevention strategies. I don't know the answer to this, but interested in anyone who might. Have any of the schemes ever explored using investment in prevention strategic projects around prevention as part of premium rating, rather than just letting good claims experience flow through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
sorry.
Yes, it has been tried, and in Canada in particular, and it has been shown to be really, really very successful. And there are several states in both Canada and in the US that are now looking to bring that in as being what's actually in flight, taking on the premium space. Because as we've heard today, and as you would know better than what I do, being an actuary, the experience rating just doesn't have an impact on what's happening. Felix, thank you very much for your talk. I'd love to have a chat to you afterwards. As a social researcher and having been involved in evaluation for a very long time, it's very interesting looking at the way that an actuary thinks about evaluation in comparison to the way that a social researcher thinks about it. And many of the things that you have talked about as being stages of evaluation, for example, are considered in social research to be different types of evaluation. But within the prevention space, to add to what you've already said, Laurel, one of the biggest challenges is that you don't know, if you don't do something, if it'll have had any or no effect. And so therefore, one of the biggest challenges with doing something like evaluation and prevention is actually holding your space and sticking to your guns and knowing, being very certain about why you were doing the evaluation and what it is you're trying to get out of it. But thank you for your time, Felix.
No, thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for attending. That discussion was really great. If we could all, just before we thank Felix again, actually, please remember to fill in your presenter evaluation forms and hand them in at the appropriate time, I think the end of the seminar. So please thank Felix again.